to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Adam Camilleri.
And Red Powell.
Good evening.
We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. 40K is being rocked to the core.
To its very foundations.
Did you see that hook, that clickbaity title that I just worked into the first couple of minutes of the conversation?
Very well put.
Yeah, quality content.
Yeah, so today, I mean, by the time you're hearing this, it'll be a little bit later than this. But today, we got a big reveal into how core units and characters are going to work going forward in new codexes. And, you know, as you know, we talked a fair amount on the last episode of, like, about real-world things. And we were talking about, you know, how tanks don't flip over when they go boom. That's not, Red, that's not what you said. But that was my takeaway.
That was my only takeaway, too.
Good.
You know, in this, the characters will only buff things with the keyword core, or let me say that, the characters that we know about right now, the ones they talked about, because I was driving today and I was thinking about, well, what about tech marines not being able to do something to vehicles? I'm like, well, dummy, they're going to have another rule that says what they do to vehicles or whatever. Yeah. But the alteration to things like the lieutenants and the captains being able to have their aura effects affect core things is different than what we have right now, and it's a pretty significant change.
I think it's huge, and I'll say this from the outset: I'm a fan. I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm a fan of this.
I'm with you, Adam. I think that, you know, so when you look at it, it's how the ability is written. You're exactly right, Paul, in that some of these abilities, you know, it's exactly what they say, and understanding that there's going to be, you know, so if you take Space Marines, for example, and they've had a lot of synergy across the entire army, it's going to be instead, you know, it's more focused on, at least to certain degrees, there's going to be synergy within the core. You're going to be able to build a lot of your synergy better between core units and between abilities that have that can affect core units. But, you know, then, so like, I mean, the captain or whatever, he, you know, he might not be a core unit. So then he's not going to, as the article stated. So I think it's a good balancing effect. I think that it definitely is going to shift the game. And I think the way that they're kind of intending it to be played as the designers.
Well, when we had the first, I guess, character FAQ is like, do characters buff themselves? And I got the impression, maybe now seeing this, that that maybe when they were writing the FAQs, they were like, well, I guess that's what it says, you know?
Yeah.
But or I guess, you know, what it really means was, yes, obviously a model is within range of itself. And so when something says it does this to models, then I guess by proxy, then that is the case. But maybe that wasn't what they set out to do, or maybe things have just evolved since then, and here we are.
So here's my analogy for it. I need an analogy for anything. That's just how my brain works. But, you know, you have there are different types of businesses and sub-businesses where everybody works with everybody, and then there are some businesses that are what they call siloed. And my business, the what I work in my job is siloed. I work in a department that only works with others in my department, and there are other departments and they only work with people in their departments, and they answer to the heads of their departments and stuff. And so when you have a Space Marine Captain works in his silo of core units. And then you're probably going to have a Tech Marine, which works in his silo of armored units, and an Apothecary, which works in his silo of infantry units or whatever. So there's this real fundamental breakdown, which sounds a lot like what the Codex, you know, Codex Space Marines feels like and is. When you feel like when Gilliman was sitting down writing the Codex, he was all like, and then the captain buffs the Repulsor, and he's like 20 inches away from the infantry. You know, that's not how he envisioned it working. I feel like this is a lot more reflective of the fluff, on top of it being a really interesting way of crafting your armies now. And I think there's going to be a fundamental shift in the way we value things. I don't know, this is speculating on what's going to be carried forward in the new Codex, but they've already alluded to the fact that chaplains are going to be carried forward in the new, the super chaplain from Faith and Fury.
Master of Sanctity. Yeah,
he's going to be carried forward. So we could assume that things like the Tech Marine are going to be carried forward. Now, all of a sudden, the captain makes no difference to those gun lines. He makes very minimal difference. But that Tech Marine is tripled in value because he's like one of the only applicable buffs you can place on your artillery, your Thunderfires, your Whirlwinds, your Executioners, your new Landspeeders and Predator equivalent tanks. So we could see a fundamental revaluing in the way we construct lists, which I'm really excited for. I think this is a great change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it does mention in the article that this is not just troops. So it's not just things from the troop section of your stuff. This is, I mean, they call out specifically the heavy intercessors, which is cool, by the way. 10-man squad of heavy intercessors.
Oof.
you know, one of my things is I look for in value when you're going down and trying to find out what the best value choice for your army is. It's like, how big is this squad and how much oomph could I get out of a stratagem to burn on this thing? And, you know, 10-man things with big guns, you know, you have to look at that. But that's what they use as the example. Say it's not just troops that you're talking about. They can be in the quote-unquote core.
So I'm interested to see how much specialization they put into this. Like, is it going to what is core for Dark Angels going to be different from what is core for Blood Angels and Space Wolves? Is what is core for Ultramarines going to be different from what is core for Raven Guard? I'm really interested to how much nuance and how much depth they go with this. And that is what I would like to see. I would like to see them mix it up for different factions, different things. I'd like to see Death Company and Sangard. Maybe not Sangard.
I'm going to read verbatim. In the case of the first two books, Codex Space Marines and Codex Necrons, many elite units such as Terminator squads and Lich Guard, as well as fast attack units like Bike Squads and Tomb Blades, have the core keyword. Even some vehicles will be core units too, where appropriate.
Well, you're thinking that. Well, my first instinct there is things like rhinos, things like impulses, drop pods. Maybe for some armies, might get the core rule, which I think is exciting as well. I do hope repulsor executioners. Well, they already told us that repulsor executioner doesn't, but I do hope things of that ilk don't end up being like your heavy's five support backline. You know,
I don't know about rhinos. But like dreadnoughts.
That'd be sick.
Bunch of stompies coming up the battlefield, getting the benefit of a captain running in behind him or a chaplain or something. I'm excited. But is it realistic? Like, as we were talking about tanks, and can't a captain be organizing and buffing? I mean, it doesn't have to make sense. It doesn't have to have a real world, correlation.
Yeah.
It just makes sense rules-wise.
Yeah, and so that's I mean, really, it is a game mechanic, right? And again, we go back to George E.P. Bach said, all models are wrong. Some are just more useful than others, right? And so, like, you can find something wrong with every abstraction that, if you want to, in regards of a mechanic that's emulating something real, right? Because that's the whole point. It's an abstraction. It's going to take something away, and in doing so, it's not reality, and therefore it invalidates itself to certain regards, right? And so we, as players, we buy into this, and we have to accept certain degrees of abstractions. So when it comes down to it, in the core element, I mean, would you like, you know, to have the ability to be able to coordinate and give orders to every single aspect to perfect coordination, which is what we can say prior to this introduction of the core and everything else like that would be. Yeah, sure, you would. Like, everybody appreciated it. Those that had the advantage definitely played into it. They're adding in an abstraction where, okay, only the core are going to benefit from it. And they've given some reasons to that, and you can dispute it, you know, to whatever extent that you want to. But I mean, it's kind of like when we go back to the seizing mechanic, right? We talked about that a little while ago when they got rid of the seizing mechanic, right? Can the enemy seize on you? Can they actually seize the initiative? Yeah, they absolutely can. However, when it comes to the gameplay that we have, I think the greater majority has agreed that they didn't like that 16%. And I think that Games Workshop, being the, you know, game company, the model making company that it is, understood that it was something like that. And so they kind of, you know, they let that mechanic fall to the wayside. And that's okay. Like, it's, again, it's a war game. It's not war. And so it's okay to accept some abstractions. And there are reasons to it. You just got to buy into it. And if you don't, I mean, I think it's still going to happen.
You make a good point about us making a different value assessment of things because of this when we're building our list. And, you know, in this picture, like in the article, it shows two captains, like a Blade Guard captain or whatever, and then the guy with Storm Shield plasma pistol. And then right behind him is the Banner guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do we think the banners are maybe affect all models? So, like, you have these layers of buff things. So, you know, company standard buffs everybody. He buffs the captains. The captains then buff the core or whatever. And I don't know. Sounds good to me if it works out that way.
That does sound pretty good. Crazy thought. So right now we have a lot of different mechanics built into the game. What if Psychic Awakening has been a test bed for different mechanics? Things of the ilk of pivotal roles, say what Harlequins did, where they have an aura and they can pay to exchange that aura for another aura. What if that's something that's being applied wholesale? And say at the start of the game, instead of buying Chapter Master, you can pay 2 CP and his Real One's aura no longer. He instead of becoming captain, becomes a brigadier. And his aura no longer affects core, it affects artillery keyword, it affects heavy support keyword, it affects...
You're probably on something. I mean, as far as Psychic Awakening being a test bed, I think you're exactly...
Yeah. Right. What if all these mechanics, these different little dribbling and different little trial things, like replacing Smite for Eldar as a, you know, Eldar got to replace their Smite with a different power, and you can swap it out, or the Exarch powers and things like that. What if these are all being a test bed for a bunch of different mechanics and see which ones fall flat on their face and which ones have legitimate merit? That would be really exciting.
You're definitely onto something. I mean, I think that any time that a game designer releases a restriction, like no one can do this. Well, then with as much variance as we have in the game, like the one guy who can do that then becomes spicy. And that's something that you can throw in there.
And I like that the G-dubs. So my hope and fear at the same time was that when we get the Space Marine Codex, and this is, you know, still to be heard, but it sounds like this, the way they're going is that they weren't going to, so much as change the mechanics of Marines and adjust them to kind of level them out, I guess, because I think there's almost an accepted perception that they are too strong. They've got too much juice in the tank. But I was fearful of them removing things wholesale, because I feel like it does just create a feel bad moment. Oh, I had some stuff and it has been removed. This is a much more elegant way of doing it. You still have all the same buffs, but we're just creating some parameters upon which you can use them. I feel like this, and this goes into what Red said, they're creating a construct within the game rather than taking things and giving things willy-nilly. They're just taking things that were already strong and just putting some nuance into them, which I'm a big fan of.
Maybe we'll get rules for all the different Primaris lieutenants. Like, if you take the one post this way, he buffs these units. If you take the one post that way, he buffs...
We need the 8. We still need the 8. You know how the 8 for Tau? We need the 8 for lieutenants. If you take 8 Primaris lieutenants, they all buff each other in a different way. And like, you know, super plasma pistols and, oh boy, super chainswords. Enjoy.
You'd have to bump that up to like 16 or something. I think we're more than Primaris lieutenants.
this is a very carrot or stick moment. They're giving us the carrot. They really put the stick away on this one, haven't they?
I think some people are going to feel the exact opposite.
Yeah? Oh, that's fair.
I think that some people are going to be like, man, you know, my army has to function this way. Like I need this to work on my Thunderfires or whatever. And if it doesn't, then my experience is impacted, shattered.
Mm. So
yeah. Yeah. I was talking to someone else about that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of chatter out there, right? There is a lot of discussion about this right now. And for sure, I think this is definitely if we saw some deviation, you know, some people felt like the shift from 8th to 9th, maybe with Psychic Awakening, maybe it felt a little more gradual than it did of more of like a, you know, a straight shift between 8th and 9th. I really think that as they do this and we see the first 9th edition codexes, I really think we're seeing the significant distance between 8th and 9th at this point. I think it's enough of a shift that people have to, it's no longer just the terrain and the setup and everything. It's also now these changes in the units and the very core of the codexes and whatnot.
I know you tried to resist saying that.
I did. I really did. It's all right. I really do think we're seeing 9th edition more so than we were anything of 8th edition at this point.
Well, I mean, we all said that, didn't we? There was a very hard reset from 7th to 8th, and it took us a good, probably 9 months before we got the vision of what G-Dub even wanted 8th edition to look like. Like, it was only until we got like a good third of the codexes out that we realized, oh yeah, everyone's going to get a minimum of 2 pages of stratagems. Some are going to get 4 for some reason, and others are going to get 2. But, they're all going to get a decent amount of buffing characters. Everyone's going to have an aura, everyone's going to have stratagems, everyone's going to have stratagems to get more Warlord traits, stratagems to get more relics, everyone's going to, we had a real real sense of the structure of the gameplay as well as for how the missions were progressing as well, where they did have that divide between end of game and progressive. And now we've got a vision for the missions. We've got a vision for the tables. We're just waiting for the visions of the factions now. And I feel like you're absolutely right, Brad. We're starting to get a little bit of an inkling of how GW intends for things to be played. And to me, it's feeling a lot more like 5th edition than it is 8th edition from the way things are going. Remember in 5th edition, we started having really, really siloed armies. Oh, if you took Warboss on bike, you got bikers and knobs on bikers as core, as troops.
I love that. Case. I did really like that.
It doesn't feel like we're going straight back to that. I'm not sure we want to go straight back to that, but I would like more of that than what we had in 8th, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, since we are just spitballing here, like there's no, we're just making some assumptions and leaps of consciousness kind of things. Since we know that there's going to be like a wholesale edit of codexes that have these like flamers and heavy flamers and that kind of stuff, do you think they'll go in and sprinkle in some core and these types of rules in other codexes? Coming just right out of the gate after this mechanic goes live for the Marines and Necrons?
I think it's going to be tough because, and I was thinking about this too in regards of the shift and adjustment. You introduce this core aspect. I was kind of, so I don't know if you guys saw it. I mean, they, in the Warhammer community articles, you know, they've been slowly but surely dropping this or that or whatnot. And Indomitus, so we saw the shift with some of the characters in that, you know. So, for example, Space Marines, it wasn't a huge deal, but litanies being done at the beginning of the command phase versus the beginning of the turn or the round. Mm-hmm. And then with the Necrons, you saw a shift in My Will Be Done, where now there was more of, you know, it used to be My Will Be Done was pick a unit, and then they kind of split it with the new Necron Overlord, where some of it is an aura and some of it is select a unit. And so what I was interested to see was if they were going to do more of that. And we kind of saw that in this article today in regards of, okay, well, this core, you know, these core units are going to get it. Now, are we going to have kind of a gap? Now, we saw in the preview, right? And you guys the other day mentioned some of the stuff when we talk about, I mean, Blood Angels, Space Wolves, Death Guard, and Death Watch are all getting their deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's three of the Space Marines on top of the Space Marine Codex, and then along with Death Guard, are the Death Guard going to have the write-in that changed the abilities? How much longer do we wait for the rest of Chaos to catch up while Death Guard suddenly has core units? Mm-hmm. And the rest of Chaos. I mean, that's a great question, Paul. Is Death Guard going to show us what is core for Death Guard? Or are we going to get a good idea of what core is going to look like for Chaos Space Marines at large?
Yeah, good, very good pickup.
It's coming, right? But at the same time, like, we don't even know, like, if they're already talking about core to be the Terminators and Lich Guard and that kind of stuff, this might not really be a restriction. It might just be as simple as that picture of it's not going to work on your artillery and big tanks and stuff because that's not what this character's function is. But if it's got two legs, including things like dreadnoughts, maybe that's what this guy, you know, in your case, you know, Red, with your filthy Xenos, you know, if he has 8 legs, whatever, then that's what that army functions like.
Is there a backhanded buff here to a bunch of Xenos factions? Just I'm throwing a bone here, but is this a backhanded buff to Xenos factions? So let's say Orc Warboss can only affect core units. He was only affecting core units anyway. Is this a backhanded buff? Like there's nothing really changed. Like, well, you're taking a Warboss to keep your Orc boys in line. Your big blobs of Orc boys breaking heads, things of that ilk.
Well, even let's just say it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change most things. It's now given them a divergent path to make rules and things more exciting in different directions, and then not have that coincidental, you know, incidental effect of overbalancing or overpowering one thing based off of how well they push one character or one type of character or another.
Yep, that's really true.
Like Pharos. But,
yeah. Well, see, the thing is, like, we're at this point in the game where stuff doesn't need all the buffs to be killy. Like, a Thunderfire cannon doesn't need rerolls. It already hits on twos, man. Like, you know. If you're whinging that your Thunderfire cannon no longer gets rerolls, oh, cry me a river. I got no time.
just use it as an example. You know, and I'm fishing for all kind of stuff and like making all kind of assumptions. Like in the picture for the article, there are some aggressors standing there.
Oh,
I mean, I'm sure it's just a stock pick, you know, happens to be of the captain or whatever. But you're talking about is it a backhanded or an around the corner buff for things? Aggressors are just right on the cusp of being good. And if they become one of the, let's say it's a few units that are able to get buffs from characters, does that make units like them better?
Yeah, well, if it's not getting into the, you know, pros and cons of exclusion buffs. So if, you know, if you were to weigh up, oh, I can get X amount of shots out of this amount of aggressors, or I could do the same thing with this amount of repulsors. Difference is the aggressors get buffs, the repulsors don't. All of a sudden, the aggressors are better, technically, from like a, just a pure damage output point of view. And yeah, you have to start weighing things completely differently. It's really going to fundamentally change how we value stuff. That's what I was saying with the Tech Marine before. That Tech Marine, if that remains in the new codex, and I'm assuming it will, is all of a sudden the single best buff you can get. For an artillery, a gun line for Space Marines. I'm assuming, this is a wild assumption now, but once we get to, say, AdMech and things like that, Dominuses may not affect artillery anymore. Maybe you need a Manipulus or a Daedalosis to get buffs on vehicles, or vice versa, or any either of those combinations. So I think there's a fundamental rethink of our character usage. I do like where this sits, though, coming into this edition, because we have fundamentally less characters in the game. I feel like we're going to look back at 8th edition as Hero Hammer in comparison to what we got now. Like, yeah. I don't know about you guys, but at the absolute tippy-top most, my lists have 5 characters. The absolute freaking most. And most likely it's 2 to 3 on average. Mm-hmm. I don't know how your boys' lists are looking at the moment. But even for Guard, like, I'm looking at no more than 5. I used to run 7. You know, 7 was an average.
Yeah. I used to take a lot of named characters for Blood Angels, and I don't know that they're all going to make their way into the list again.
Mm. Well, so what I'm saying is we're getting less characters, and now they're becoming more specialized. So I feel like I think that's good for the game, personally. I feel like we're going to have more units, and we're going to have to get our units to do most of the heavy lifting again. Whereas what it was, you'd have a Smash Captain who was 120 points, who buffed all the guys, and then when he didn't feel like buffing all the guys, he'd go and buff himself and smash something in the face with the Thunderhammer. It was like it was almost filling too many roles, if you know what I mean. It was too much a jack of all trades. He was a master of all the trades. You know, he wasn't half good at any of them. It was just great. Same could be said for a bunch of other things.
Well, like Demon Princes, that's what comes exactly. to mind. I mean, you know, they buff themselves and that have, I mean, I still think they're good, even if they don't do that, but that is still, that's a marked decrease in their overall power when, you know, we talk about throwing them into just about anything and now they're not as good.
Yeah.
If this goes into effect for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, you know, Adam, you ran away with it in the best direction, I think. No, it was great. It was a great direction. You're 100% on point where I think people should really be looking at this in regards of, I mean, we were talking about that with lots of folks that it's not Hero Hammer. This, the Death Star, in some cases, it's still going to be there, sure. Like some units lend themselves to that. Mm-hmm. But in reality, like I'm with you. I mean, I've been playing around with my what I'm affectionately calling Iron Warrior Primaris, which are quite heretically so. I'm using Imperial Fist traits with my Primaris Space Marines that I'm painting up as Iron Warriors. But to that point, I mean, Imperial Fist, so they have a benefit to kind of compile all these hero traits onto one. So I had a company commander, a Phobos captain, who I had given the Eye of Hypnoth. So not only was he giving reroll ones to hit, but reroll ones to wound. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, giving him 2 warlord traits. And then, of course, I had the, you know, or a warlord trait, and then having the Master of Sanctity off to the side. And so I'm with you. I only had 2 characters in my list so far. Not a lot out there where I was trying to plus up, but I like this to an extent with the core and everything else like that, because, and just like the article kind of hinted at, like with trying to push the heroes or the characters into the fight a little more, that, you know, they aren't going to benefit these bigger platforms necessarily. Mm. Now there might be some, you know, exceptions here or there, but your hero, your character is going to want to get into the fight to one extent or another because of where that core is going to be by and large. Mm. And so I think it's great. I really do think that they have added in a constraining factor that is adding to it's enriching the game. To play the advocate, you know, to what you were saying, Paul, I totally agree that there are going to be a lot of people who don't like this, and that's okay. It is a point of change, and I understand, you know, if you were comfortable and you had an army that has been doing well by you throughout all of 8th edition, and now you're having to adjust because they decided to change, I understand your consternation. I mean, you know, you mentioned 5th edition, Adam, and that's very much, I mean, we were playing some of this like that beforehand. And I it's just a point of adaptation that this too shall pass as we all adapt and go forward.
Maybe there's enough. People like change, just the concept of change, but no one likes to be changed.
And, yeah, there you go. Know,
maybe well there's enough things out there that, you know, most people are not being changed. And so we'll get through this little awkward phase. But I do want to mention that Mortarion, you were talking about Death Guard coming up. Mm. Mortarion, one of his just most fiendish rules is he's the Primarch of the Death Guard. You may reroll failed hit rolls of one made for friendly Death Guard units within 7 inches of Mortarion. So that means he buffs himself. So when he rolls in with his 70 million attacks and rerolling ones, then hitting, I mean, that's part of what makes him just so, you know, I guess murderous is too much on the nose. But, you know, that's what makes him so, one of the things that makes him so powerful. And if he no longer is able to give himself that insurance, you know, should we expect like a point decrease or power level decrease or whatever for things like Mortarion and Magnus?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I wouldn't. So here's something we haven't brought up yet. We have a chapter approved coming in 3 months. I'm not sure the depth of data they're going to have to go off, and the amount of playtesting and the amount of reps that we're going to be able to say, here's 100,000 games of ninth for you to educate and inform your decisions. But we're really going to, I think this will be exactly what Paul says. Like, they're going to get a clean slate, I guess, ninth edition, with in full knowledge of their codex direction. Cause maybe the last chapter approved was written with knowledge of how the psychic awakenings are going to sit, the first breath into the new edition. Whereas we're coming in with a bit of stability, but that stability isn't through reps. It's through just being able to see how people have evolved their thinking more than how people have evolved on the table.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, they've got a clear vision, I think, for this. I think there's a real clear vision for this.
It's going to be more, it's going to be more informed by their vision than it is by our data, I guess. Yeah. And so I think that's going to give us a much clearer idea of how they want the game to be played, how they want things to be weighted. So I think this could be the most interesting chapter approved we've had.
That's a fair point. That's a very interesting perspective on that. Yeah, I wonder if we'll see any COVID delays or whatever.
That's actually true as well. Yeah.
But, you know, still.
But yeah, look, if Mortarion does go down in points, legit, it'll like we'll come back in 3 months and be like, Paul. Nail on the head, mate. You're exactly right.
Well, you know, I mean, like, it just has to be factored into the power level, the powerfulness of these and usefulness of these characters, because you want to see them on the tabletop. But, you know,
so consider, you know, Mortarion doesn't have it, and I'm sure there's some people out there in the Death Guard realms that would argue he should. But, you know, so Gilliman, and I mean, I was joking around about Gilliman being, you know, Gilliman will be core too, you know, knowing the odds of Space Marines. Kidding, of course. But the Gilliman and Abaddon, they both have this capability of buffing Imperium or Chaos units large, respectively. And so, you know, are we going to see shifts to that to certain extents? Like you said, Adam, you know, is that going to affect the price point? And so that'll be interesting to see with the adjustments to that as well.
What other ones? So is it only those two that reach across all chapters, all variants to their super factions?
Celestine grants, you know, when we talked about sisters previously, you know, she increases their invuln, but she actually grants other Imperials an invuln, guard, I think, but she grants a 6-up invuln. And then the custodes banners, the Exilias, I know that they can be extended to Imperium units as well. Mm. And so those are the ones that immediately come to mind. I think that there aren't very many other cross faction mixing capabilities. There might be some Eldar, but I think they
cleared up all that Eldari stuff.
They did. Yeah. I think they did for some good reasons.
Yes.
But yes.
I'm sad about it when it happened, but yes.
So I mentioned straight off the bat that I think this is a backhand buff could be a backhand buff to Xenos factions, things that don't rely on this amalgamation of buffs onto a single or multiple characters to buff and double down on all their units. But just a crazy idea popped in my head, knights. Right now, knights are in a horrible place because of the state of the game and the mission structure and stuff. But they're also in a bit really bad way because they're not hard to kill anymore. They're legitimately not that hard to kill. And when they really first started taking hits was, and GW used the diagram perfectly, where the repulsor executioners came out that would wound them on a 3+, and no matter what they do, they're going to knock off a decent amount of wounds. Is this a backhanded buff to them too? Like the heavy mech archetype, the elite durability archetype lists, things like of the Elk of Knights, or like the buggy, even the buggy list for orcs, what to say, because a lot of the things that are a lot of the best things, the best, most powerful, potent things for knocking down armor are in your heavy support slot and presumably are not going to be core, hopefully.
I think the knights need to get an inch shorter or the train needs to get an inch taller.
Well, I've always thought that if you took mono knights, your knights have OPSEC and they count as five. Like a little knight counts as 5 models, big knight counts as 10 models. I always thought that was an easy, elegant way for them to do it, and would give them legitimate agency in the game again. But you have to take mono. No mix and match, no loyal 32s or Adnec battalions, that crap. If you're in for a dollar, in for a dime, baby. I've always thought that would be an elegant way for them
you
to
are,
do it.
I mean, you're mentioning a good point, though, because these characters help smooth out the variants of those vehicles and stuff, the things that are good at taking them out. I mean, even Shadow Swords or whatever being buffed by, Harker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's he doing? Like, they can't even hear him. He's outside. He's like, shoot harder.
No, what? I think Harker should be the exception. He's the one that should.
Harker should get to stand on top of the Baneblade. He should have this special rule.
You know that, what's his name? Yarak has the Fortress of Arrogance. You know, he needs to be in there telling
them
to slick load those cannons or whatever. But no, great point, though, about these things that you're able to really control the variance for these powerful weapons. And if they're always doing 5 damage or something, then there's just no prayer for a knight. But now if they're back down to doing occasionally 5 damage, then maybe you have some less predictable turns from the things that are good at taking them out, and so they do get to make it to turn 3, turn 4 kind of thing.
Yeah. And defensive buffs become a lot more prevalent, a lot more impactful. Like if you've got a repulsor executioner that's hitting you on 3s with no rerolls, all of a sudden if you've got -1 to hit on, say, Mortarian, coming in, they're hitting him on 4s with no rerolls, crazy. You get 2 hits instead of 4. Which you would have gotten, 4 hits with 3s on rerolls, maybe. And then you're wounding on 3s, no reroll 1s. You got 2 hits, 1 wound. He's got a 4 up invuln, 50-50 hit. Like, all of a sudden, those big things seem a lot tastier because all of a sudden, you might get to use them.
Yeah.
And when you couple that with being able to leave them off the board, maybe they're sitting in a sweet spot now when we don't just have infantry hammer. And I don't mind, saying that, I prefer infantry hammer, to be honest. That's how I like and enjoy to play the game.
I like them to both be able to exist, though. Like,
exactly. Like, I want to. A perfectly balanced world that all things should be, thanks Thanos.
I mean, these things look so cool. They need to be on the table. People are compelled to try to continue to make them work on the table.
Yeah.
It'd be great if the table worked for them.
Dead set. Remember the start of 8th edition? Morty and Motarian were everybody. They were the, what were the two bad boys in Mighty Ducks called?
Oh, the Bash Brothers.
They were the Bash Brothers. Yeah, the Bash Brothers.
Smash Brothers is the video game. The Bash Brothers. Yeah.
Bash Brothers, yeah. Mighty Ducks. And they flew together. They both got wings, but they were everywhere. And mind you, I didn't miss them when they were gone. I didn't miss them when people stopped playing them. I missed them when people said, I can't play them, they're bad. Then I was like, oof, you shouldn't be out. It's a freaking Primarch. It's an actual, legitimate Primarch. That should never be a thing in the game.
Should never be bad.
You should never be like, I regret taking them.
You've always been able to make a case for them. I think that when they actually fell out of fashion, that was more it, because some things bubbled up and were able to deal with them. And that is the ebb and flow of what the game should be. But yeah, I do hope that after these changes we were talking about specifically, that they are addressed. And so them and things like the Knights, I mean, even the Castellan and the Valiant and that kind of stuff, they look neat, and Let's make sure we got space for them.
I mean, I think that it's kind of there's always a discussion in the meta, and you hear that hyperbole that this is, so-and-so is unplayable. Bash Brothers is an unplayable combination now. I do think that there was some more weight to that in 8th edition previously, where you could say that with some more clarity or definition. Mm-hmm. But I think that the mission structure, and we have hinted and we've touched on this before, I do think mission structure in 9th edition with how the primaries are set up and how some of the secondaries are set, I do think that there's a lot more use for units across the board and how you apply them. I mean, there's some things that you can lean into, but I think it's really a lot more difficult to say that oh, well, that unit is entirely unplayable. Well, yeah. There's a lot more in how you use it, and you can still get quite a bit of mileage out of something that people, and I understand there are degrees of efficiency and points and whatnot and how you, but I still think that ninth edition has opened up a lot more, and it's not so much bent on, you know, the thing that I think we, and there were still people running them quite efficiently, but I think Bash Brothers got knocked out in eighth by and large by Castellans taking a prime seat, you know. And when they stepped up with those big old cannons of theirs, I mean, you just like the Repulsor Executioner, I mean, the Castellans very much had that unlock. And I just don't think that they necessarily are immediately canceling each other out right now in ninth edition.
Yeah, I don't think we have a polarized anything yet, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I think these changes are a positive thing. I think it gives them some, shows us, you know, kind of what to expect for things to come, and gives them some trails to follow out and explore in different ways to give us, you know, cool more variants in the game.
Mm. Can I just a message for G-Dub?
Yeah.
Stop making Marines. Just stop for 6 months. Can we go 6 months without a Marine release?
Didn't you saw the little video, right?
I did.
Nope. I mean, Cole says no. Hit the button again. More primaries.
That was hilarious. I love it when you can look at yourself, you know, and see what's there. Well, guys, let's take a break. We'll come back. We're actually going to talk briefly about the Nova Open Charitable Foundation that we got to participate in this last weekend. Pretty awesome. Be back in just a second.
See you then.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Hey.
Red, Adam. So this past weekend, we participated with the Nova Open Charitable Foundation Virtual Lounge.
Yeah, an amazing opportunity came our way. And Paul hit me up and asked us to be if I was willing to be involved. And, I mean, how could I say no? Like, really?
Yeah, but I don't think we knew what to expect. This is the first year they've done this virtual element to it. So at the Nova Open tournament that was canceled because of, you know, the conditions of where everything is in the world right now, a big part of their fundraiser, their raffle ticket purchases and people donating, was from the lounge that they would have on site. And when they weren't able to do that, they asked if we would assist with getting some attention and running this, facilitating part of this on that weekend, that day, that three and a half hours. So we streamed live. Adam and I were on the camera. Josh Diffie was behind the scenes, and Reg, you were in the chat on Twitch with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we streamed for 3.5 hours or so. And, you know, it was really great to see the outpouring of support in that, people tuning in and then people buying raffle tickets, you know, for charity, but with the, you know, with the upside of maybe coming away with a cool model or unit or army or whatever.
Yeah. That wasn't something, like, everything I saw there was worth putting a raffle ticket on. Like, there was nothing that I was like, I would regret owning it, you know?
Yeah.
Not only do they put a top shelf organization together, top shelf charity together for a lot of great purposes, but they give away some top shelf stuff. It's not like you're bidding on some gray plastic, some some eBay propaneed crap. You're bidding on some professional, ridiculously high quality stuff, all proceeds for charity. A phenomenal.
Yeah, so just really happy to be a part of that. And they were, I mean, the artist who gave their time, the models and stuff, like all that stuff was there. Like, people, you know, wanted to be a part of helping these charities. And
yeah
it was, again, just fun to be a part of it in some way. And thanks for everybody who tuned in and came out and, you know, watch for more stuff. I think if they do something like that again, maybe we'll do it too. And, you know, it was real fun.
One of the best experiences I've had in the hobby.
I participated in one of their rituals of tiny beer mugs.
You did. That was hilarious.
So I ordered, I don't know, I felt like I ordered a fair amount, and I made up a bunch of little tiny beers just as we were starting to wind up the stream or whatever. And now they're like gremlins. Everywhere I look, I find one or two of these little beer mugs. I guess I don't know. neat experience.
I actually, watching the stream and everything, I mean, they had the lounge crew on there, and I couldn't pass up. I tried out the, they gave instructions on how to make different drinks, and so I took their word for it and made one of their old fashions. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So that team, they had not done that kind of stuff, this video stuff, this, this internet stuff before. And they really dug in and embraced it and took a hold of it. And it was a really cool team atmosphere and mentality. And I love that kind of stuff. It was just really cool to see it all come together.
Me too. It was crazy good. They were phenomenal, the ladies. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell they haven't done this every year for the last like 10 years.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so fun. So again, just watch this space as far as that's concerned. But it's incredibly rewarding for us, just like on a personal level, being able to support those charities. And then, talking 40K and for a good cause, even better.
Exactly right.
All right. So I know we talked about the core 40K being rocked to the core. But it led to an interesting discussion. I think that part of it is, some of the things are going to be the same for some people and it's going to be different for some others. And I think I'm encouraged to see where this edition is going.
Yeah, to me too. I was really excited for 8th edition, but as soon as I got the indexes, I got all the indexes and looked through all of them. I think a little bit of the shine came off for me, and then it kind of came back over time until I feel like there's this massive crescendo of a perfectly balanced or near perfectly balanced game just after the Castellan died. We had like 6 months of majestic gameplay. Every army had a good rule set, had a couple of really good plays. They could all win it on the day. And then Marines came out and just completely screwed the pooch. And then the Luster came off again.
And there's something, and I don't mean to pick too much at the scab here, but, they told us in certain regards when going into 8th that 7th edition, at the tail end of 7th edition, there were a ton of books, there was a ton of material. And I think we kind of, and whether it was stated or not, we kind of thought 8th edition was going to be different in regards that there wasn't going to be a massive bloat necessarily attached to it. And to say that it's just not correct. There was bloat and it continued and there was a lot of, don't get me wrong. I love the material. I loved reading the Vigilus campaigns. I loved the direction of Psychic Awakening. It was all awesome, great buildup, a lot of lore attached, and then a lot of rules, though, right? But I will say, with the way 9th has kicked off, I think that the model of the game and the setup and everything, as Adam, I couldn't let you go without this. There is this app that they are constantly updating the material on, and that the bloat is consolidated into this one tool that if you just subscribe, you can actually access that information. Now, of course, with the new deal, you're going to have to buy the Space Marine Codex. You're going to have to buy the Necron Codex. But I'm telling you, it's like they've consolidated all the rules in it. I can easily search through everything that currently exists in the rules is in there right now as it is. And I'm just saying it's very convenient. It's very cool. And it's worked very well for me.
I would highly recommend it today.
Yeah, I'd recommend it to anybody who doesn't have it.
Sorry, mate. I've never heard of it. we are getting so much mileage. That was so good.
Changing gears just a little bit. Up for order right now is the special Catechin model, Ripper Jackson.
Oh, man.
Vasquez.
Yeah, and they got me thinking is like, what other 80s heroes can they bring into this? There's plenty, right? But a lot of them are Arnie or Sly, which we've got as Marbo, and then Vasquez. Yeah. But a Ripley, a Chuck Norris,
We don't have a Norris. We technically don't have a Jean-Claude Van Damme. And what I really want is I want a Hudson. I want a what's his name from everything? Bill Paxton. I want a Bill Paxton like commissar. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking, was it Van Damme? Did he play Bison one time? No, he was Guile.
He was Guile. Street Fighter. Who wants to go home? Who wants to go with me? Yeah, so good.
Was he Guile?
Terrible movie. I love it. He was. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's plenty of meat left on that bone, and I don't mind if they did every single one of them. Like that's.
Oh, they should absolutely.
Yeah, it's more of an homage than anything, if you ask me, and I will gladly field them all.
We need a Ripley like in a Sentinel or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
That is exactly what we need. A special character, Sentinel pilot.
Two heavy flamers or something.
And the close combat weapons, the loader.
Yeah. The loaders. The four-joy loader, which are now apparently, I think they're out of production.
Well, it can be this perfect way to transition to plastic. And
yeah.
It's like a dual kit. You have your generic, you know, Baneblade loader, and then you've got Ripley, the Broodlord killer, the Swarmlord killer.
The Hive Tyrant. Thrower, outer of airlocks.
And then we need an airlock.
We do. We need an airlock.
I love where this is going.
Special mission. Oh, yeah. This is why isn't this not a mini game already? It's a special level of Blackstone Fortress.
There you go.
Oh, bam. Perfect.
Next chapter.
Yeah. I'll take my check in the mail, G-Dub.
There you go. But anyway, they could do them all. And again, I would gladly field them. And it's nothing but nostalgia and love it. I mean, look, they're not a one-to-one, you know, which obviously, so there's still so people don't have to, you know, they don't have to like the movies to get the characters. But I don't know, man, I would gladly fill up the Guard Regiments, Katachin specifically, with all these cool action stars.
Yeah, me too.
Give them to me. I want to jump to a hobby segment. I think I've hit another level and I want to talk about it just a little bit.
But let's do it.
Yeah, I want to talk about repairing decals. So my decal work it's gotten stronger, actually. I actually feel over the weekend, or it might have been the last couple of days, I posted a picture on Twitter because, like, Red, I don't know about you, but do you have anxiety when you go to seal a model?
Yes.
It may cloud up or some detail is going to get obscured or whatever.
It's a significant emotional event for me.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I've got these models done, and I don't like the different finishes that are on the model because some of the paints have different finishes than some of the other paints. And when you're looking at it in the light, it just kind of gives you a weird look. It doesn't look as good as if it were all the same finish. Or when your finishes are accidental, like sometimes the gems or the eye lenses or something could be shiny, but when the knee pad is shiny and the rest of it isn't, then maybe that's not what you want. Or it creates this weird trick with your eyes to where it doesn't look as cool as it can be.
Yep.
And I went out and sealed these models and it just went on flawless. And in my opinion, you know, but it really brought everything together and the models look really cool. Didn't obscure the edge highlights and I just really loved it. It did. I had this and I didn't notice it till after I posted the picture, but when I put the sealer coat on there, you then noticed that the paint on like a dagger, like one of the little emblem daggers or whatever, on this guy's belt wasn't all the way coated. Like I had a little bit of the red showing through. And when the reflection of that metallic paint wasn't bounced around my eyeballs, I was then able to see it because I put the sealer on there. So I touched it up. That was good. But so that's lead me to my next point. Decals that when, you know, I use my decal regimen is putting a satin coat or whatever where it is going to go and then putting the decal on top of it and then using Microsol or Solvacet is what I use on top of that decal to really blend it into the model. And the edges of it kind of fade away and you get it. To me, it looks a little bit more of a seamless surface after you do that. Well, that's another reason to then go back and do it because it has a different finish than even the paints and everything else. So it leads into the sealer stuff. But putting on the yellow decals for the sergeant, for the shoulder pad, for the chapter markings, I tore both of them, two sergeants I was putting on, and one of the little wing bits separated on both of the decals. I'm going to pretend it's a defect in the decal and not my ham-handedness. Probably ham-handedness. But I discovered that yellow of the decal is almost a perfect match to Flash Gets Yellow. And so you can use just a little bit of Flash Gets Yellow and go in and repair the decal. And then once you put that even coat of sealer on top of it again, it's all relates back, you don't even notice the paint.
Well, I'm glad you figured this out versus me because I'm not sure. As you know, we're talking about anxiety with this kind of stuff. I mean, I have a hard enough time with sealing, much less doing decals. So
the decals, I mean, of course, years of kind of messing around with it and having different levels of success. But I don't dunk the decals in water anymore. I clip the decal out and then put a little water on the decal, move it in place with a brush, there's like a, here's where it gets super tricky, and I don't want to add to your anxiety. You need just the right amount of water on the model itself to where the decal will set and you have enough time to play with it before it starts to grip onto the surface of the model. And then once you get it in the right place, you need a little bit of a steady hand to be able to absorb some of that water off with a paintbrush without moving the decal you just put on and put in the right spot. Are you starting to get the sweats yet?
I mean, just thinking about it kind of makes me nervous, but I think I can continue to hang.
And then once the water starts to evaporate off of the, you know, it starts to where you don't, it's not liquid anymore. That's when I've been coming back with the Solvacet, because the decal is already gripped to the model, and you're less of a risk of moving the model moving the decal out of place when you're coming back with the Solvacet.
Okay.
And that Solvacet then begins to dissolve the parts of the decal that you don't want. And so that's when you especially don't want to be moving it around a lot, because then you could tear it even faster. But painting over the decals, like, you could use the decals just as this, almost like a stencil, a pattern to paint over, depending on how you want it to look in the end.
Yeah, so this is where, like, I feel like I really need to have, like, I would not practice this necessarily on the unit that I think I would settle on. I would have to find some model that I'd be willing to, probably a series of models that I would like to practice this on, so that I make sure I get it right, just so that you go back to the decals and getting it set and whatnot. Because once I put it on a model and I realized that I set the decal and it wasn't straight or something like that, I would be kicking myself for a while after that.
That's an excellent point. I've learned to set up what, like, my guide points on the model are before I start moving around the decal. Mm-hmm. Like Space Marines, the Outriders specifically, they have the shoulder pads are pretty chunky. And then in the direct center of the shoulder pad, they've got like a little nub that extends out over their arm, or the forearm part that's directly in the center of the shoulder pad. So if you get your chapter, like I have the benefit of having this blood drop that hangs down under the wings, but it gives me a direct center line. So if I line the blood drop up with the little nub on the shoulder, I'm going to have a straight decal.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll have to figure out, you know, so like I said, with these Iron Warriors and everything, I've gotten a little, with some practice, I'm getting better at, because I'm painting, you know, hazard stripes and chevrons and whatnot. And I kind of do the same thing. So I'll have to make sure I'm paying attention to that to kind of set up similar reference points when I get to decals.
Like guard tanks have all the rivets and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you should use them as your reference points for a lot. I guess like you're tracking the stars when you're traveling by boat or something.
No, sure. I mean, it's absolutely, I've been doing these chevrons. It's kind of the same deal, like whether it's the rivets off of the armor piece or something like that, for sure. Very much so.
That's a good tip. When you're painting the chevrons, do you paint on the light color first, or do you go for the black first?
So I am fortunate in that, you know, we talked about the other time previously about some of these recovery, you know, projects that you pick up, whether it's, you know, secondhand or whether you want to call it a garage sale or something like that. I was fortunate where I was able to pick up from actually a good friend several of his, and he was playing Scythe of the Emperor, right? So that was like a black and yellow paint scheme. And so I've really just taken advantage of that, where the yellow has already been present. And then that's where I go over and do black. And, you know, we've talked about painting lighter colors or yellows before, you know, colors to that effect. And I think it's much harder to do the yellows over the black versus like doing the lighter color and then painting the black over that. I would much rather have a lighter color underneath. And then, so I have very thin tape here that I use, and I take that and I even cut that in half, and then I put those over it, and then I just paint the black on. And that's, and then I can go back and actually blend in the yellow once I have the black down, so I can see where the, you know, the zones are or whatnot. So.
That's some tedious work right there. That's something I struggle with. I struggle with masking in general. I either mess up the mask, or my paint bleeds over, or when it doesn't bleed over, the tape pulls up some of the paint below it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't seem to find that mix on how to do that. Like the right pressure, or what to, you know, how to get that working for me. Just not good at that.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, I, what I, I use the tape, and then I don't leave the tape on there for a significant amount of time. Mainly, you get concerned about it pulling paint off or whatnot. But also, I would rather pull the paint off, pull the tape off, and then go in there and I can correct myself in painting, using very fine paint brushes or whatnot, or even pins. Paint pens with black really helps reestablish those lines sometimes with I have a nice, flexible, very thin ruler that I'll use, and that can help me redefine those straight lines for the black too.
And that's a really good tip. I know we're kind of meandering around with the hobby stuff here, but I also painted one of the greatest faces that I have personally ever painted, to the point where I felt confident enough to post like a close up on Twitter. And the reason I'm even more proud of the accomplishment is because this is the second go at this one, at the same face that I had. And the first time that I painted it, he looked like Leatherface from Chainsaw Massacre. I mean, it looked terrible. But I went in and by the time that I was done trying to highlight the original face, I'd pretty much painted over his entire face with a much lighter color. Mm. So then I thought, let me just go in and instead of using like Reichlin Flesh Shade or one of those things, let me go in and use a thinned down Gilliman Flesh. Now, Gilliman Flesh, like, it works right out of the pot over Wraithbone or something, like a light color. It's one of those, it's Nuln Oil, Athonian Camo Shade, Agrax Earth Shade, and Gilliman Flesh. It's in that ranking. But what we're seeing is people's mature with their use of contrast paints, it doesn't need to be, or doesn't have to be used just as a one thick coat type of application. And I used it I didn't shade all over shade. I just used it to try to get right in the recesses. And it hung there. It did that. And when that all dried, I was able to go in and pick out some of the features of the face. And I didn't obscure it, with another big thick coat of paint, because I had already messed it up once. And I was worried about losing all the detail. But what that Gilliman Flesh did is it went in there and actually helped define some of the features, so I could help go and find them with my look. I broke out the big guns, man. I went with the extra small Artificer brush.
Oh wow! And was that like a couple hairs, a couple threads?
It's not that tiny. I don't know what the tiniest to tiny brush is. It's the smallest one and the highest quality / smallest one that GW offers.
Sure.
But I've actually found they're kind of expensive, but I've gotten some, I feel like I've gotten value out of these brushes. Mm. I got them on a whim and then didn't use them for a long time. And then one of my good buddies, just said, what are you waiting on? I was like, you never know, you could always find an excuse not to use the cool thing that you've got, but play with it. It's like a toy like anything else. And I've enjoyed using them, but I try to reserve it for, I still don't use it for metallic paints. Whatever, I try to reserve it for when I think I really need it. And I went in there and I did this guy's teeth and I did his eyes, and anyway, I'm pretty pleased with it. But it was a recovery of a mistake. And I think that's what makes it even more satisfying.
Yeah, that's awesome. I saw it. I think it's great, especially like you said, on a close-up kind of deal. I mean, my face is, and I do love Gilliman Flesh. I think that's a great material. However they got to crafting it, I think it's really good for flesh. And but what you were able to do at a close-up like that, man, I mean kudos to you. I'm definitely not there by any means. I appreciate my minimum foot distance from my models the close-up. So
yeah, you just got to be pleased with it. That's it, man. But I think I rely more on product than talent. And, maybe that's one of the way, one of the things we talk about is just finding the right mix for you. You're going to see artists out there and people doing tutorials that do it their way. That may work for you, but you may need a blend of different people's stuff. And so anyway, so I try to be as explicit as I can about the results that I'm pleased with about what I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, Red, I know we kind of, again, did a little bit of a sprint around the hobby thing, but how's your Tanith coming?
Man, so the Tanith are pretty good. I have some cloaks that I've got, some third-party cloaks that are going on to some old guard that I have finally gotten primed in. I have well over 60 old Necromunda and actual Tanith models that are base painted. I have a good friend of mine is supplying me with some bases that he has, and so I'm waiting for those to come in, and then I'm going to get these guys based, and they're going to continue progress. I've got most of the vehicles set up. I'm kind of, you know, we talk about, you know, vehicle-wise, I'll admit, so I've also, you know, maintaining your tools and everything, I've got my airbrush that I'm working on. I just ordered some small replacement parts, the needle, if you're not careful mm-hmm. with that. I got to admit, in moving around, probably just out of some clumsiness on my part, I moved around, and I could tell you right now, just from looking at it, that the needle is affected. And so I've got a replacement needle coming in. I mean, I've got an Iwata Eclipse CS. It's a great little airbrush that I have. It just needs some parts, and it's not something that you necessarily need to go out and buy a whole new airbrush or anything. I just order a new needle, and I've got to get a new needle cap, and then it'll be ready to go. And so I'm excited, man. I'm making some pretty good progress.
Okay, I can't wait to see more of it. Well, thanks for joining me today. Thank you for listening. Please like, share, and subscribe. I don't say that often enough, but I'm trying. I'm trying to be better about it. You got anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I appreciate everybody tuning in, and thanks to those that tuned into the Nova Foundation deal. It was really awesome. Glad I got to be part of it while I was in the chat. I really enjoyed talking to some of those folks, but I really do appreciate you listening, and look forward to talking to you next time, Paul.
Heck yeah. Adam had to drop, but we'll all be back next week. We'll see you then.
Take care.
Make my day.